Michigan poet and writer Jim Harrison died over the weekend at his home in Arizona. He was 78. Here now to talk about the life and work of Jim Harrison is poet and writer Keith Taylor. Keith coordinates the undergrad creative writing program at the University of Michigan. Keith, you emailed us that, I'll quote you here, "I've been out in the woods all day and have been brooding about this all evening, more tears than for any other writer recently." Why is this? Why is losing Jim Harrison especially hard for you?
For Michigan writers, Jim was a central figure. He wrote about where we live. He wrote about it in such a way that we had to move into it. Now, I knew him, but lots of people knew him, and I didn't know him well. I tried not to thrust myself upon him. But he was a figure here. Even when, you know, he could be abrasive or obnoxious, he would always come back from that in such a way that it made our place important. It made the fact that someone worked here as an artist central, and there wasn't anybody quite like him.
You know, for people who might want to discover Jim Harrison in depth, perhaps beyond having seen movies like Legends of the Fall or The Wolf or Revenge, tell us more about his life. He lived big, didn't he?
Oh, he lived large. Yeah, Jim, he was a man of appetites. Although born, you know, fairly modest circumstances in Grayling. His father was an agricultural agent, I believe. Grew up in Reed City. It was kind of fun to see the big obituaries around the world today, to see Grayling and Reed City and the New York Times and the Guardian of London and things like that. So he lost an eye when he was a little kid, and he always said that drove him into the woods when he was seven. So he was always comfortable in the Michigan woods, always sort of had learned to be comfortable there. He was a hunter and a fisherman. He enjoyed sensory things. And that, of course, they're all through his books and his poems and his novels. Mm-hmm. The fact that he could see things and enjoy them. When he had enough money to be able to eat well, he ate very, very, very well. He had a taste for alcohol that made me think. I was always surprised he lived as long as he did. I'm very happy he did because he kept working. But he enjoyed it a lot. Good wine, good booze. He loved to travel. He particularly loved France, where they loved him. Oh, when I was thinking about his food, Jim famously wrote a food column for Esquire back in the 80s, I believe. And Esquire paid for him to go have the most expensive meal in the world. An 11-hour, 35-course lunch in Paris with 19 kinds of wine with it. I mean, I would have died.
He would have died.
But Jim did it and wrote a really cool essay about it. So
I guess, did he enjoy... I'm wondering, did he enjoy the experience of being a Hollywood script writer?
No, he didn't. He really hated that, and he did it for the money. He was always looking for a different way to make a living. He refused academia. He'd refused the New York scene where he'd gone, and he tried to teach. He'd gone. He was an editor for The Nation in the early 60s, poetry editor, and he didn't want to do that. So he thought he could make money, and he did. He made a lot of money as a script writer, but he didn't enjoy it. The movies that you listed before, I think the movie of Wolf and the movie of Revenge were not very good movies. Legends of the Fall at least got a lot of attention. I think he was dissatisfied with that too. But he also worked on a bunch of others, most of which were never produced. But he made a lot of money.
So there was that.
There was that.
What would you say was the voice that Jim Harrison brought to his novellas and his essays and his poetry? Was there a unifying voice there?
Oh, yeah, there certainly is. I mean, that's one of the reasons he got to this status, which his obits make clear that he achieved. The voice... it's playful. It's intense. It can be very, very serious, but it can also be very funny. It's ribald, even bawdy. Some people would find it vulgar, but I think most people find that, even that, winning.
Earthy.
Earthy. There we go. That's a better word. Thank you, Cindy. It's unique. There's nothing quite like... you always get compared to Hemingway, but that was stupid. I mean, the comparison to Hemingway is too easy. Just Michigan and hunting, that's the only reasons for it. But he had a luxurious style. You could move into those sentences and just sort of get carried away with them.
Would you read us something by Jim Harrison? I know you've got some special choices. Please do.
I'd be happy to. I was thinking of both one tiny little bit from his novels. This is from my favorite of his novels. I'm not going to say the best. I mean, those categories shouldn't really apply. This is just a few sentences from returning to Earth, where the character who is doing historical research on the depredation of the Upper Peninsula is out walking in the woods and sees this. I'm startled when I emerge into a clearing west of Barfield Lakes. In the distance, about a quarter mile off, a bear stares at me and then trundles away from my upwind scent. It occurs to me that since I'm so preoccupied with things that no longer exist, it's a specific tonic to see an actual bear. History always withers in the face of a raven squawking at me from the bare tamarack tree beside the pump house. So history always withers in front of the reality of the real thing.
The New York Times in their obituary called Jim Harrison probably America's least effete nature writer. Mm. Did you like that description?
Yeah, and I think it's true. It's very, I mean, since I write about the natural world too, it's so easy to become a romantic, to move in, or at least close to the purple when writing about the beautiful things we see in the world. Harrison was able to pull back at that even as he entered the beauty, even as he found the beauty redemptive. He was able to write about that without too many adjectives or easy verbs.
Keith, why did he leave Michigan for Arizona?
Oh, I think it was health. It was also Montana first and then Arizona. You know, Jim was a smoker all his life, and breathing became difficult. His daughters had moved to Livingston, Montana, and I think his wife, who died last October, by the way, his wife wanted to be close to her children and her grandchildren. So they moved out there to the drier air, and then Jim started going south for more and more of the year to right down along the Mexican border. I think the weather was better for him. The air was not as moist. He could breathe more easily.
So it wasn't so much turning his back on Michigan. It was family, it was, health. And
he was still writing about Michigan, particularly about the Upper Peninsula, right up to the end. Apparently at his desk and writing when he slumped over with a heart attack. So,
for someone who wants to discover Jim Harrison's best writing, give us a few titles.
There's so many titles. What are there, 40-some books?
Yeah. What's a good way to crack open?
Well,
and
of course, I love his poetry, and his poetry is very direct. I mean, people who don't read poetry can move into that. You don't have to feel you're being overwhelmed by reference or words. And there's a collected poems called The Shape of the Journey. Brand new book of poems just out for a month called Dead Man's Float, interestingly enough. But the collected poems is a good thing to start with. Put it by your bed and move through it slowly. The novels and the novellas, wow. Jim wrote novellas like nobody. He revivified the form for American letters. 8 collections of novellas. Certainly Legends of the Fall. If you know the movie, mm-hmm. The book is, it sounds like such a cliche, but the book is so much better. The Legends of the Fall novella. His first novel, Wolf, is a first novel. It was, it's got a little bit sloppy for whatever that means. He was discovering his voice, but, there you got a smart kid going out to the woods of the Upper Peninsula to try to hear a wolf in the belief, slightly amusing, that if he hears a wolf cry, it's going to save him from his own depressions. It's a great place to start. Oh, this book, Returning to Earth, and the one before it, which is called True North, are about the same family. True North is very dark, very bleak, very troubling. And then Returning to Earth, even the title will tell you, once you go through all that horror of True North, you return to the earth, and the earth sustains you.
Can you give us one more selection?
I would. This is the last poem of the last book of poems, Dead Man's Float, that Harrison saw through publication. I suspect, since he was always writing, I suspect there's going to be posthumous books. Mm. But this is the last one that he got out in his lifetime. It's a poem called Bridge. It's sort of a fanciful thing about the sea, but at the end it's very clearly Lake Superior. One little reference, the Spanish poet Machado, who had a really vivid, wild imagination tied to the images of the natural world. So, Bridge. Most of my life was spent building a bridge out over the sea, though the sea was too wide. I'm proud of the bridge hanging in pure sea air. Machado came for a visit, and we sat on the end of the bridge, which was his idea. Now that I'm old, the work goes slowly. Even nearer death, I like it out here, high above the sea, bundled up for the Arctic storms of late fall, the resounding crash and moan of the sea, the 100-foot depth of the green troughs. Sometimes the sea roars and howls like the animal it is, a continent wide and alive. What beauty in this, the darkest music, over which you can hear the lightest music of human behavior, the tender connection between men and galaxies. So I sit on the edge, wagging my feet above the abyss. Tonight, the moon will be in my lap. This is my job, to study the universe from my bridge. I have the sky, the sea, the faint green streak of Canadian forest on the far shore.
Poet and writer Keith Taylor on the passing of Jim Harrison. Jim Harrison died Saturday at his home in Arizona. He was 78. Keith, thank you so much for being with us to share your thoughts.
Thank you.